In this ASI cast, advertising effectiveness research consultant Peter Field discusses with Brian Jacobs how data gathered over the last 4 years is enabling us to take a look at how digital or online advertising has started to impact outputs. Whilst not entirely attributable to online advertising, this period coincides with a marked increase in emphasis on short-term measures of effectiveness. However, in Field's view, there is now a recognition that digital needs to engage with longer-term brand-building metrics in the way TV has been doing for decades. In his view, TV is at least as effective now as it has ever been, and with huge reach as a video format, it has the ability to engage the emotional response so important to long-term advertising effectiveness.
Right, hello everybody, this is Brian Jacobs, and today I'm joined by Peter Field, the great expert in marketing effectiveness and marketing effectiveness studies. So good afternoon, Peter.
Hi there.
Hi. Peter, I know that we're all very much looking forward to hearing you in Budapest in a couple of weeks' time, and I know that a lot of your work is based around the IPA Ad Effectiveness Awards. I wondered if you could just start by explaining to those of us who perhaps aren't as familiar with them, exactly what the awards are, how long they've been going, and how your database is constructed.
Sure. So the database I'm working with is the confidential data that lies behind the IPA Effectiveness Awards submissions. So this is a biennial effectiveness competition that's been running for more than 30 years now. Though for the presentation I'll be putting together here, I'm very much concerned with the last 4 years or so. So data from the 2014 and 2016 entries. So what it enables us to do is to examine how inputs, in the sense of strategy and media choices in this particular instance, influence outcomes. And we're particularly interested, obviously, in hard business effects, measures of effectiveness and measures of efficiency. So it enables, as I say, to compare inputs and see how inputs improve the level of outputs that we achieve and to enable us to fine-tune our strategy and thinking. But it's a database of, you know, very high level proven effectiveness. The case studies themselves are very, very tightly argued, often involving econometric models. So it's not just the numbers of case studies, and they're well over 1,000 in the database now. It's also the quality of the data that lies behind them that I think gives it its value.
And they don't only come from the UK, do they? I mean, I know they used to only come from the UK, but these days there's more and more international entries, aren't there?
Absolutely right. So the majority are still UK, but even where they are a UK case study, we are, despite recent events, part of a global economy and part of a particular pan-European economy. So the case study may have been evaluated in the UK, but that actually often refers particularly to pan-European or global strategies. But somewhere between 20 and 25% of the case studies submitted now to the awards competition are in fact from completely other geographies and have absolutely nothing to do with the UK at all. So you'll find case studies in there from the US, from Canada, from China, from Brazil, from Russia, and so on and so forth, India, all over, frankly.
So when you said you were focusing on the last 4 to 5 years, I guess that's so that we can start looking at cases where digital started to have, or online, I should say, really, has started to have a full effect on plans.
Absolutely. I mean, previous analyses that my colleague Les Binet and I have done we've looked at online, but online obviously has been a rapidly changing event. And the tendency, of course, is for people to say, even though you might be presenting your findings only a year after the analysis, the tendency is for people to say, yeah, but it's changing so fast, that's just no longer valid. So we now feel we've got enough data from a mature era of online. We've got plenty of social data in there, for instance, as well as other forms of online. We can look at paid, owned and earned. We can look at video versus non-video online. We can now begin to cut the data by all the ways which seem to matter to the industry and also to effectiveness. So I think we can begin to form some much clearer views about how online may or may not be changing the world of effectiveness and the rules of effectiveness. And that's very much what this is about.
And I would imagine that online is bringing short-term effects very much to the fore. Is that a simplification, or is that broadly what's happening?
Without doubt. I mean, clearly, we can't entirely lay the blame, if that's the appropriate word to use, for short-termism at the door of digital. I mean, digital is responding to, I think, a business mood as much as anything else. But what we've seen is that particularly since the advent of the global financial crisis, almost 10 years ago now, sort of 2007 or 8 in the terms of the effectiveness awards entries. And what we've seen is an explosion of short-termism, very much greater number of the case studies coming in are short-term, by which I mean evaluated over periods of weeks, months. Less than 6 months is our cutoff period for that. So an explosion of those. And if the IPA awards competition is in any way a kind of reliable sample of the world out there, a litmus test, if you like, then it suggests a huge explosion of short-termism in general. I suspect short-termism in general is worse than amongst the IPA case studies for all sorts of sensible reasons. But it has been a very great trend in recent years, and it's, I think, in part fueled by digital metrics, which has encouraged people to think short-term.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that, I mean, now have to sort of think about these things rather differently, don't we, I suppose? I mean, I think in the sort of old days you had, you know, media forms like direct response or, you know, those types of things which were obviously there to drive, or promotional ads, you know, which were there to drive a particular short-term effect. It now seems as if people have almost, I wouldn't have said they put short-termism above all else, but it does seem as if almost that it has become much, much more important and significant than it ever used to be.
Well, of course, this is in some ways a kind of paradoxical trend, because in fact, a lot of digital channels, and I would suggest this is true of social, are actually better at long-term brand building. They're best used in that way. And if they are used for short-term sales activation, they can often provoke negative responses. And we've seen an explosion of ad blocking, very much prompted by the deluge of these kinds of short-term sales messages. Whereas long-term brand building messages are much more acceptable, much more seductive. They're usually softer sell, and they can usually be more creative. So, you know, like I say, it is in some way paradoxical that the growth of digital media has become associated with short-term effects. And of course, that is largely driven by the kinds of metrics they have chosen to be judged by. Most of the metrics coming out of the digital community are incredibly short-term and self-defeatingly short-term, I would argue. And there is now the beginnings, I think, of a realization in digital that that is probably not a smart way to measure the effects, and that they need to be engaging more and more with longer-term metrics, brand-building metrics, and brand-related metrics. So that's beginning to happen, but frankly, it's long overdue. And I think we need to get a clearer idea now about being able to show how digital can contribute to those longer-term leading indicators of growth in the way that TV has been aware of and has been measuring itself for decades now.
Although I guess the difference is the sort of quality of creative work. I mean, one of your sort of famous findings has been that, you know, award-winning creative work tends to work better than non-award-winning creative work, which suggests that people who judge awards sort of half know what they're doing at any rate, because they seem to get it right. And yet the quality of creative work online is sort of, I think, generally accepted to be pretty poor. I mean, do you think that's just a function of the way in which does it become a kind of circular argument, this, you know, that it's kind of being measured on the short term, therefore it must be short term, therefore we don't really care about the quality of the ads?
No, absolutely right. And of course, the problem here is that if you measure success in the short term, all sorts of features of long-term successful advertising cease to be important. So in an emotional engagement, for instance, the extent to which a campaign can get itself talked about, and most importantly of all, the creativity of advertising, which is incredibly important to long-term success, able to improve long-term success by an order of magnitude, has no effect in the short term. In fact, non-creative campaigns tend to be slightly more effective in the short term than creative campaigns. Because if you're looking to drive short-term effects, what you want is the plain, unvarnished facts and information, and particularly you want deals and offers.
I mean, how when you present your work, I mean, I'm sure that when you present it to the advertising community, everyone sort of says, well, great, you know, that's exactly what we would like to hear. It plays completely into what we think should happen anyway. What happens when you present it to boardrooms, you know, advertiser boardrooms, those sorts of people? I mean, do you find that you get listened to? Do you find that people say, oh, yeah, that's really interesting and there's something in that? Or do you find they just sort of go back to what they were doing anyway? I mean, what sort of reaction do you get from the advertiser, the non-marketing community, if you like?
The problem, I think, is that it's very rarely done. I mean, there are relatively few marketing departments, I think, that have their hands on the kinds of data and the kinds of analysis that would enable them to put this case themselves to general management, and or maybe they wouldn't be believed. But I think it's terribly important that we do this. I think an awful lot of general management, and particularly those from finance backgrounds, and these people are, I'm not for a moment suggesting that they are stupid, it's simply that they've never been exposed to marketing and the way it works, and they've never been presented with a concise and coherent argument for why they should even begin to think long term. They themselves are under pressure to deliver quarterly results. So the tendency for them will be to impose the same pressures on marketing. Unless they see an intelligent and evidence-based argument to think otherwise, then it's only natural for them to think that marketing success can be bought in the short term.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember being involved in some research once which asked sort of CEOs and CFOs of their views of marketing, and sort of, I suppose if we were summarizing it in a glib phrase, it would be sort of pink and fluffy, seemed to be the kind of expression that was used, you know, not.
And that would be putting it politely.
Exactly. Not rigorous, not supported by data, not just sort of spending a lot of time making nice ads, you know, which of course is very unfair because marketing people do spend a lot of time worrying about these things. It's just that they.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think what we need are more. More people in general management who have some knowledge of marketing. And I think it's very interesting that when Paul Polman, the incoming CEO of Unilever, early in his term, he decided to do away with quarterly reporting to the city. It was a very brave thing to do. But part of his argument for that was that marketing does not operate over the quarterly business cycle. And I think, you know, that is a huge piece of wisdom that is widely not understood in the business community. And I think if there were more people with Paul Polman's background and understanding of how marketing actually derives its major achievements over much longer term periods than quarters, then I think this would be a much easier argument to win. But we really do have to educate general managers about the true facts of life when it comes to marketing.
Yeah. I mean, the ASI event is, of course, going to be full of broadcasters, as well as obviously very senior researchers. So broadcasters at a senior level. And obviously, we all know the much maligned, well, much disproved statement that TV is dead. Or it's amazing. It seems to be dying at a very, very, very slow rate if it is dying. Can you give some, you know, sort of sucker, if you like, to those people and say, well, as a matter of fact, TV is still very important. It still does have a fantastically important role to play in the campaigns that you see and the studies that you've done.
Oh, absolutely, massively. And that is a big part of the project that I'm doing now with Les Burnett. Is what we're finding is if you're looking at the very, very recent data, that TV is at least as effective as it always has been. It remains the primary driver of effectiveness amongst all the channels that we look at, including all of these new social and online channels that we can look at. It remains the primary driver of effectiveness. And in part, that is due, it's due to a lot of things. It's due to the fact that, in part, that TV remains an enormous influence on consumers. It's very popular. It's very widely watched by large numbers of people for long periods of time. So it has huge reach. Being a video format, it also has a huge ability to engage an emotional response in consumers, which is very, very important to effectiveness, and that isn't going away. And secondly, it paradoxically has benefited from the online revolution, because what we find is that TV, when it is used in conjunction in an integrated sense with many of these new online channels, becomes even more effective than it is on its own. So it's benefited from all of that, and in that in of course, in no way squares with the fact that its share has been in very long-term slow erosion and decline. And that is driven by the fashion rather than the effectiveness realities of life. You know, I think marketers are increasingly being persuaded to raid the TV budget in order to put it into other channels. And I think in the early days, that was probably sensible because, as we've seen, there are benefits and multipliers at work when you combine TV with new digital channels. But the data, I think, is increasingly suggesting that that has now gone at least far enough, and that actually what we should be doing is certainly looking to preserve TV budgets, if not roll back and build them slightly, that perhaps the optimum point has been surpassed, and that we maybe need to roll the picture back a few years to where it was. But certainly there is absolutely no evidence to support the view that TV is dying or yesterday's medium, and in fact that the reverse is true. It remains in rude good health from an effectiveness point of view, and frankly should have a very secure budgetary future.
Yeah, I'm sure at which point you will get a standing ovation.
I love it. I love a good standing ovation. So, yeah. But it's a finding that I'll be very happy to present because it happens to be the truth.
Happens to be true, exactly, and from all sorts of different directions. Well, Peter, thank you very much indeed for joining us for this ASI podcast, and I'm sure I speak for all of us and say we're looking forward very much to hearing more about your work in Budapest in a couple of weeks' time.
My pleasure.
Thanks very much indeed.
Thanks.